This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird, Kulchin, Ford. Bird, Kulchin, Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoak and Grayson Grundhaver.
And welcome in, everyone, to another edition of the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com and the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim365 YouTube page. Welcome in on this Tuesday, March the 12th, 2024. We are nearly at the midway point of March, but we are just at the beginning of March Madness as the Women's Conference Tournament has wrapped up. The Men's Conference Tournament begins this week in Kansas City, and here on Sunday, we'll get the big selection shows to let us know where the tournaments are going to be played and laid out and what the formats are going to look like as far as who is where and who you're playing and what your journey to a potential national championship is going to be. So very fun times. We're going to talk a lot of basketball, obviously, and we'll get into a little bit of football as well at the start to cover some tracks that we didn't get to last week and just kind of look forward a little bit as we are a week out, not only from full-on March Madness, but also spring football opening up for Dave Aranda and the Bears as well. I'm Craig Smoak, Sikkim365.com, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver, Director of Broadcasting for Sikkim365.com, also Garrett Ross behind the scenes producing as well. And the women have finished their tournament. We'll get into that. The men are gearing up for theirs. Grayson, we're in the middle of March. I mentioned football around the corner. Busy times here in Waco and abroad.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, I mean, camp season was here for me as well, which I know we're going to dive into a little bit. But I was up in Dallas, and so getting to see some recruits, that was nice as well. Basketball kind of in full go right now. I mean, it's March. Lots of important games. Lots of, honestly, fun moments. This is where, you know, you get to see all kinds of memorable moments in these tournaments, which have always been a lot of fun. And curious to see if Baylor, you know, takes this tournament more seriously than I feel like they have in recent years. But yeah, I know we're going to dive into that. You know, the women's team, a little bit of a disappointing loss, I would say. But yeah, overall, a lot of fun, lots of anticipation with spring football as well. So a lot of things coming up very soon.
Yes, yeah, so let's go ahead and get into it. We missed a commitment, I guess, last week, yeah. Just sort of flew under the radar, and that's a part of the downside of not spending a lot of time on social media, which I kind of take a step back away from football season anyways, but I don't know. I don't know if it's the mix on Twitter right now or not, but I haven't been on there as much, and so I guess there's some things that fall through the cracks, and I guess last week got to talk a little bit, and I just completely whiffed on it, and you reminded me of Colin Peacock, the latest commit for Baylor football, the safety from Gunter, Texas, a few days back became the latest member of the 2025 recruiting class. So let's kind of catch up and restart, let's start there as a big pledge who had some big time offers, and this 2025 class now squarely on the front burner and squarely on the minds of this coaching staff in terms of where their focus lies in recruiting right now. So Colin Peacock, what do you think of the addition, and what does this mean for the very early portion of this 2025 recruiting class?
I mean, it's a really, really nice kind of just addition and just continuing this momentum that they've been building. And I mean, I know when Colin committed, this wasn't one where I feel like it got a ton of buzz. He didn't have a 247 ranking or an on-3 ranking or any kind of ranking at the time when he committed to Baylor, but his offer list is pretty good. I mean, Oklahoma, Houston, SMU, Oregon State, everything that I had heard, this was a head-to-head win with Oklahoma. And that's big. I mean, to win a battle against a SEC school like Oklahoma, a perennial powerhouse in Oklahoma, just getting the job done in that regard is a big deal. And this one had a lot to do with Matthew Pallage, a lot to do with Dave Aranda, and a lot to do with Aaron Hunt. Those were his three guys that were primarily recruiting him. He is an athlete, but he's probably going to fit in at safety at Baylor. My guess is probably something like a star would make a lot of sense, closer to line of scrimmage. He's already pretty big at, I think he's like 6'1", 207 pounds was his most official height weight. So you add all that together, plus he's a winner, two straight Division II, Class 3A state championships there at Gunter. And I mean, just a really good prospect and fits kind of the mold that they're looking for as far as being an all-around really good athlete, an all-around really good culture fit, and a guy who just, you know, did all the right things when they've gotten to meet him on junior days and various visits and just fits in really nicely with what they're trying to build. Now, I will say, if you go look at his highlights, you're not going to see a ton last year because he was injured for a lot of the season last year. So he's coming back from that, but I think he's going to be just fine. And this is a really, really nice pickup at a position they really need to address in this class.
So there are now eight pledges for the class of 2025 as Colin Peacock joins a bunch of offensive linemen and skill guys so far. You've got Adam Schoble, the quarterback from Columbus, Texas. You've got athletes in Demetrius Brisbane, and I guess Colin Peacock also listed on our side as an athlete. Jamin Brown, Cash Courtney, Deshaun Bryant on the offensive line, and Caden Knighton at wide receiver, Ashton Jones, or excuse me, Caden Knighton at running back, Ashton Jones at wide receiver. So that's the makeup of the class right now. These are very fluid lists, obviously. You hopefully have these eight guys when all is said and done, but there will be more added. There will be some subtracted because that's just the way that it goes most of the time. I mean, every year for the most part. So, you know, there are going to be some tweaks to this, but how do you feel about just kind of the base that's being formed for the 25 class right now?
I mean, it's a really, really good start. And you mentioned Brisbane and Peacock. They're both listed as athletes. We do share our, you know, website base with a lot of different schools. So they are an athlete, but both are expected to play defensive back, primarily safety for Baylor. Specifically. So they're already addressing that area, which is a big one. The areas that they still really need to focus on are linebacker and wide receiver. I know they got Ashton Jones committed, but they're probably going to need to take, you know, I would think four wide receivers in this class, just based on how the class breakdown is shaking up. And then linebacker, they really need to address that position. They need an infusion of talent there as well. So still a lot of areas to address, but I mean, this is a great start. I mean, they're pretty much every site has them as a top 20 recruiting class right now, some top 15. So, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better start, especially after the season that they just had. I mean, it was really disappointing, and they're still recruiting at a very high level.
So there you go. There's a little bit of catch up on something we just didn't get to on the last episode and kind of flew under the radar a little bit, as you mentioned. But Colin Peacock, the athlete from Gunter, now a member of the 2025 commitment group, and that's a list that will keep on growing and hopefully just keep growing and get to your 2021, whatever it is that you're desiring, and stay pretty in lock and step with one another. But it is recruiting, so long way to go, but a very nice start so far for the 2025 class, and that's what you like to see, because now it's really just going to all boil down to what happens on the field next season. I mean, pretty much everything's going to revolve around that. This recruiting class, all the other questions about the future and where they are, the pecking order and everything like that, it's all shaping up, building up to be determined in many ways in this upcoming season. Not to put too much pressure on it. We've got a long way to go to get there. Spring ball hasn't even kicked off yet. But, I mean, we know the situation with Aranda coming back. We know just the uncertainty that other teams can use. We know that there's some pressure building and don't want to start applying that too much, you know, at the moment here. But, yeah, the recruiting class looks good. You got to hold on to it, and you got to go win games to ensure that you get a chance to finish it out. And so that's where it all, you know, fall ultimately. But it is something that has been kind of on the back burner, recruiting in some ways, because you just can't really paint the future too much. But if you can go out, win some games, build on this class, so on and so forth, that's how you get this thing back in a nice rhythm and competing for Big 12 titles.
Right, and I mean, that starts next week. I mean, spring ball right here, right around the corner, and they need a really good spring because, like you mentioned, I mean, everything rides on that. I mean, you need this class to be really good, especially after, you know, the perceived not great class they got last year, even though I think it's better than the national sites will say and the rankings. Perception-wise, you definitely need a really good class, and I think they're very focused on that. I think you can tell that by the start to this class, the hires they made with Keenan Hall, the hires they've made on the recruiting front as well. I think they're really focused on that. And, yeah, it all rides on how do they do this year, because ultimately in order to reach their ceiling recruiting-wise, they have to win football games. And you can't do – you know, you can't recruit at a high level winning three games, and you definitely can't recruit at a high level if you're changing head coaches either.
And staffs every other year. I mean, you've made all the changes seemingly you can make except for one. And you've had back-to-back years where 2 years ago it ended in massive disappointment. I mean, about as ugly as a finish as you could have. And then last year, obviously, just off the rails a great deal and a really tough season to kind of just get through. And so here they got to the other side of it, massive changes on the staff again, trying to get the recruiting up and going, and yeah, now it all pretty much rides on winning football games, and if you can do that, you can build a really solid 25 class, and you hit the transfer portal hard, and man, you can be one of the teams competing at the top of the new Big 12, but again, it all will boil down to wins ultimately, but a really nice pickup in recruiting, and so that's an area where you're seeing a lot of energy and a lot of momentum right now, and so congratulations on the newest pledge to the Baylor recruiting list for 2025 in Colin Peacock. All right, another football note that I saw before we get into a bunch of hoops. Posted this last night, but Matthew Pallage put out the graphic for the upcoming coaches clinic and couldn't help but notice, come here, Gary Patterson talk defense and Jake Spavital talk offense on Friday, April the 5th. And Saturday, April the 6th, these coaching clinics are annual deals all over America. Various schools are having their coaches clinic, but it did make me pause for just a moment to sit there and see Gary Patterson's going to be speaking at the Baylor clinic. And obviously, you know, he is a big addition this offseason, and it's just still, though, weird to see his name on a Baylor graphic and to know that you're going to be showing up to a Baylor coaches clinic. And I don't know if he'll be in green and gold or not. You think he will be? Yeah, you think he will be? And that's just we're gonna have to get over it. But it's still early enough that it's still just very weird.
I'm waiting on that first picture to be taken when he's at this clinic wearing green and gold. You know, a green and gold polo. Mm-hmm. And just, I mean, the reactions are going to be insane. I mean, this is just one of those crazy things because you don't want to go too deep into how much Baylor fans disliked Gary Patterson, but like there was kind of a mutual hate in there. I mean, Gary Patterson unfollowed and blocked so many people, including myself.
Me too. Yeah. I was one of the first ones like years ago to point out that he was doing it, and then it became a whole thing.
And it's just
I'm still blocked.
Isn't that I am too. It's just the weirdest thing to see that, and then it's full circle, and now he's at Baylor on this coaching staff, and Dave Aranda trusts him, and you know, is really counting on him and hoping that he has an impact. And now he's like the face of the defense for this coaching clinic. It's really wild.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Matthew Pallage is still involved, and Dave Aranda's involved, and it's a group effort, but yeah, I mean, it makes sense to have him speak. I mean, that's a pull for coaches. They'd love to hear Gary Patterson talk defense, but yeah, it's just still sort of weird. And yeah, I think I'm an OG of being on that block list, and last I looked, like shortly after his hire, somebody's like, hey, you still blocked? I was like, I don't know, I went and looked and I still was. So I mean, yeah, that's just how it's been, and I guess how it will continue to be, which I'm fine with. So that was just an interesting note, and that's gonna be fun to see the first pictures, like you said, that come out of him in the Baylor polo or whatever it might be. But obviously, Aranda putting a lot of faith and trust in him. He knows football. We'll see how it all works out in the end. But again, something kind of funny to see come across the Twitter timeline yesterday. Meanwhile, you mentioned the camp that you were at for...
Do you want to let's just quickly, Enoki Brechterfield did get officially announced. Yeah. I don't know if we want to, I mean, we already knew that this was coming, and I think we kind of reiterated that this was coming. Do you want to spend any time on just like,
I mean, I have nothing to say official. Really, but yeah, Enoki Brechterfield's officially on the coaching staff now as a defensive line coach. So that finalizes the group that we've known has kind of been in the works for a couple weeks now. And so, yeah, he got officially you know, through all the paperwork and is the Baylor defensive line coach. So, yeah, that's all. I don't have much to add, but go right ahead.
Yeah, I felt like it was important to mention because we got asked the question, like, back-to-back weeks, because I know it took some time, but ultimately this was just a process thing. There was something delaying it. It wasn't anything big. It wasn't anything substantial that was going to be a roadblock in this hire, but it was something that made it take some time to actually officially announce it from Baylor, because I think we got word of this, I mean, 2.5 weeks before this was announced. I mean, it's been out there for a while, but just got official. I really like the hire. I've kind of dived a little bit deeper into this, just kind of my thinking on this. And the fact of the matter is, I really like Dennis Johnson. I like what he brought to the table. I think he's a rising coach, a coach that's got a bright, bright future. But what we saw the last 2 years from the defensive line, just it did not live up to what they needed to be. It did not live up to the standard that they set in 2021 either. And you saw guys kind of hit a developmental wall as well, especially the older guys. And so I'm wondering if a new perspective, a guy that's had a lot of experience coaching underrated guys, coaching highly rated guys, getting guys to the NFL, making guys productive, and just also being a veteran at coaching the defensive line, I just wonder if that will really help this unit kind of take a step forward. A unit that has a lot of young guys that honestly, they just need development. I mean, that's what that group really needs.
Yeah, no doubt. They are a young bunch, and there's some veteran guys coming back, though. I mean, they've got some seventh-year, Matt Jones, a little more of a linebacker. Yeah. But they've got some seventh-year veterans on that defensive side, but they are young up front. And so, yeah, they need somebody to bring them along. And Anoki Brechterfield appears to have a pretty solid resume. And, you know, I'm not going to question Dave Aranda's defensive choices when it comes to coaches. No. So, yeah, big shoes to fill with Dennis Johnson moving on. But now a great opportunity for Anoki Brechterfield, who finalizes this staff for the second time this offseason. So hopefully this is the last time this offseason. You never know. There are always more changes after spring ball. But I would think at this point this is going to be the group, knock on wood, and this is who Aranda will ride with next season. So welcome to Anoki Brechterfield. And that's finally a loose end that's been tied up now. So on to the camp that you attended this past weekend. A lot of these are going to be on the horizon over the next few months, interspersed between spring ball and just the various pockets of time that you have these events over the spring and then into the summer especially. But I guess just lay it out there for the folks of what we're looking at, what we're talking about, and why it matters here.
Right, so it was Under Armour camp in Dallas. Got to see a lot of prospects, a lot of guys who are going to take official visits to Baylor. I'm not going to dive too much into that specifically. You got to go on the premium side to kind of get more information on that. But I did get to see two Baylor commits in Cash Courtney, the offense lineman out of Carthage, and Deshaun Bryant, the offense lineman out of Duncanville. Both had, I would say, up and down days. When you looked at the testing and you looked at kind of their skill work before the one-on-ones, they both did well. I think you could really see Cash's burst and kind of what he brings to the table athletically and why he was a great fit for the wide zone scheme. Honestly, Cash just, I mean, there's something about his frame where you look at him and you go, wow, he's not very big, but you also see that there's an ability that he's probably going to be able to put on a lot of really good weight and maintain a lot of athleticism. Deshaun Bryant's only 250 pounds at right around 6'5", 6'6", so he's got a long way to go as far as putting on weight as well. But both these guys, again, started the day strong. I would say the one-on-ones, kind of up and down. I think Deshaun Bryant did better at guard, and they really need him to be a tackle in this class. So he's got some work to do, but I do think as he puts on more weight and as he kind of polishes up his game, I think you will see him take that jump. But this past year and this summer, he's taken a little bit of a step back, at least in my eyes, as far as where I thought this timeline would be. Oh, he's for sure kind of this four-star territory, but it's more so he's still a raw prospect that has a lot of room to develop, and I think he's still a good prospect, but there's still ways to go. As far as Cash goes, he's basically between Baylor and Arkansas. He's committed to Baylor, but Eric Mateos is recruiting him really hard at Arkansas. Cash is a guard to me, I think at this point. Could play tackle, did a little bit of right tackle, looked pretty good at both. He really has some work to do with his hands, technique-wise. Still some room to go there, but the power, the athleticism, very intriguing based on what I saw from him. And then really quickly, I heard a great story. So Jamin Brown, the commit out of Alabama, he's their other offense line commit. He performed at the Under Armour camp in Atlanta. And I'm probably never going to get to see Jamin Brown, except for maybe on his official visit. But I was told that he had an elite camp in Atlanta and was probably the best offense lineman there, at least one of the top three. Lots of really good reports about kind of what he brought to the table. So I thought that was a really interesting nugget. And he's a guy who's definitely rising and a guy who I think is going to have a lot more offers very, very soon. So that was kind of the commits, as far as what I saw from them. As far as other guys, I mean, it's a lot of guys taking official visits, a lot of guys who I think are going to be more on the radar in the coming weeks. You had Mansfield Timberview safety and SMU commit Nate Tillman. He's going to take a visit to Baylor in June. So a little bit of a battle there trying to get him away from SMU. Byron Nelson, quarterback Leo Almanza, a really good prospect. He's the kind of guy who, you know, if he ends up at Kansas State, he's going to be just this really, really good player who you sit there and go, wow, this guy is just fantastic. You know, you see guys at Kansas State and you go, man, he wasn't the highest rated recruit, but he just developed really, really well. I think Leo is kind of like that, which makes him a really good fit for Baylor and a guy that I think Baylor needs to figure out a way to land. McKinney quarterback Zay Gentry is another one who athletically he's off the charts. Lots of length, lots of size, but it's going to be a battle. Oklahoma State, Nebraska, Wisconsin, TCU, Baylor, and SMU all have official visits locked in. He's a very intriguing one. A couple linebackers, J.J. Shelton, K.B. Winston, two priorities there. They've been at Baylor a lot. I think Baylor's in a good position with both of them, probably a better position with K.B. Winston at this moment. So, I mean, a lot of ways you can go with this. A lot of guys who I think performed really well. In general, it's just really nice to be out there and get to see a lot of prospects put their talents on display. And also, for me, kind of put together my own board of, okay, this guy moves up the board, this guy moves down. Just kind of looking at it that way, I think it is really, really helpful for me to kind of get a grasp of where they're at in this class.
Yeah, a lot of info to digest there. A lot more you can find over on the premium section of Sikkim365.com. I guess to kind of sum it up, what would be the theme early on for camp season and this staff and just, I guess, the type of athletes that they're looking at?
Yeah, lots of wide receivers, lots of linebackers seem to be the focal point. A few cornerbacks. I think they're really trying to find, you know, they're so deep at cornerback right now. I think they're really trying to narrow down the list so that they only take, you know, one or two cornerbacks and really focus on taking the top ones that they want. And so I think that makes them pretty selective with their official visits. And I think you're seeing that right now. They've been very, very selective in that regard. And then the other position is Jack. They're really trying to find some guys who can influence quarterbacks and get after the quarterback as pass rushers. So you'll probably see, I would say, three Jacks in this class as well. This is going to be a bigger class, and we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but this class is going to be pretty substantial as they're definitely trying to get a much higher rated recruiting class this time around, and they also just have a lot of needs. They have a lot of young guys that they need to add to the fold. You look at their class breakdown, it's just kind of like, man, it seems like they missed a whole kind of wave of recruiting in there at certain positions, and so they really need to address that.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, when you have the extra year that a lot of guys are taking advantage of, so you've got multiple seventh-year guys that are coming back, a lot of six-year guys, and you didn't have a lot of attrition, that's one of the, I guess, kind of counteracts is that you're eventually going to have a lull where you're going to have a bunch of guys that you're going to have to go and replace, and I feel like that's what they've sort of been building to. So, yeah, last year, very small class, bunch of guys decided to come back, and that's a combination for eventually having a class where you're going to have to go get like 25 guys. So that's what we're looking at, and that should be exciting because bigger class, more news, more prospects, more commitments, and more drama sometimes as well, but more excitement ultimately, most likely with 2025 now very much in the crosshairs and a lot of spots to fill upcoming. So that'll be fun, and there you go. That'll be the first or one of the first of many camp updates throughout the next few months, but that is good to just kind of get a little taste of what's going on right now. And so, yeah, it's a very interesting time with football. You got clinics, you've got spring football about to start, you've got recruiting, and you've got just the build for next season. So a lot going on there, but that's football for right now. We'll have much more on that in future episodes and even in the mailbag as well here at the end of the show. But let's now get into what most people are talking about here in the month of March, and that is the madness to come. Conference basketball tournaments underway, finished already for the Big 12 women, but about to get underway here in the next couple days in Kansas City for the Big 12 men, and of course across the country as well. And the madness is almost here entirely. We're almost ready to fill out our brackets, but first we've got to figure out where everybody fits in the overall puzzle. And for the Baylor men right now, just in the top 25 rankings, they come in this week at number 14. And they are also coming off some accolades as well that we will get to as far as some personal awards that were handed out with the conference, and obviously some Baylor flavor a part of that. But closing out last week, you had the win over Texas, very impressive at Foster Pavilion. Good to see that. But then it was the loss in the finale, regular season finale in Lubbock to Texas Tech, 78-68, a game where you got down big, ferociously fought back, but not enough in the end, and Grant McCaslin gets the win over his mentor and best buddy and now rival in many ways here in the Big 12 in Scott Drew. So a nice win for the Red Raiders at home, and that's how the regular season comes to a close. Win over Texas, lost to Texas Tech, and now it is on to the Big 12 Championship in Kansas City, the Big 12 Championship Tournament, where the Bears find themselves as a number 3 seed in the tournament and awaiting the winner of whoever Kansas ends up playing, as West Virginia and Cincinnati will square off. 14th seeded Mountaineers, dead last in the conference, against the 11th seeded Bearcats. The winner will go on to face Kansas, who is the number 6 seed, which that's wild that they are number 6 seed. And then the winner of that, either the Bearcats or Mountaineers versus the Jayhawks, that is ultimately who the Bears will see in their first round action. They got a bye along with number 1 overall seed Houston, number 2 seed Iowa State, which is the side of the bracket that Baylor matches up with, and then Texas Tech, the number 4 seed. So those are the four that will get those byes. But yeah, sitting back and waiting for now. But what do you think about the way the season ended? I guess let's start there.
Yeah, I'm just having a big issue right now with 3 of the last 5 games that Baylor has played. They've gotten down by double digits in the first half. And so, you know, the Houston game, obviously they had that huge comeback, stormed back, almost won that game. Probably you could say should have won that game, but weren't able to close it out. Then the Texas game, they get down by like 12, 14, something like that. Storm back, end up really, I mean, beating Texas pretty handedly by the end of it. And then the Texas Tech game, they got down early, stormed all the way back, and then weren't able to close it out. But they got to start better. I mean, these starts have just been really bad, and it's been defensively just giving up too many easy points, too many layups, too many open threes. They got to correct that. I mean, it's March now. Like, you can't be having these starts where you get down early in games. And I know you have an offense that you feel like you can come back from any deficit, but sometimes it's just asking too much, you know, once you get to March to be, you know, having those kind of deficits. So that's something that I'm going to be looking to in this Big 12 tournament. You know, can they start faster? Can they get off to better starts than they have in these recent weeks? They won 3 in a row heading into this Texas Tech game. I think if I were looking at the schedule back when we talked about a week and a half ago, the Texas Tech game felt like the one they would probably lose.
Yeah.
I felt like they'd beat Kansas and Texas and then lose to Tech. It's basically what happened. They end up 11-7 in conference play. I would say that's successful. That's a very successful Big 12 play. They played a really tough schedule, and they came out, you know, really good in my eyes. I mean, 11-7, and you only got to play, I believe they played Cincinnati, Kansas State, UCF, and West Virginia, and Oklahoma State all only once. I think that's right. The bottom of the Big 12, I think they only got to play those teams one time. I might be off on one of those, but when you think about that, I mean, that's a big deal. That means you are having to play the top of the league multiple times in a lot of cases. And that's tough. And so they were able to overcome that. I think this team is very, very good still, but they have obvious holes. And now looking forward to the Big 12 tournament, I mean, it couldn't set up any better, in my opinion. Like, Kansas is playing without McCuller and Hunter Dickinson. That's been confirmed. Bill Self said they're not playing in the Big 12 tournament. So,
yeah, they basically raised the white flag on the Big 12 tournament to get healthy, it looks like. Yeah.
And so Baylor's going to get to play either a really banged-up Kansas team that has zero depth, which that should be a Baylor win. That absolutely should be a Baylor win. And then, or they're going to play Cincinnati or West Virginia, the 11 seed or the 14 seed. I just think either way, Baylor should win that first game and make it to the semifinals. I'm hoping they get to play Kansas because that would give Baylor another opportunity for a quad one win, just enhancing the resume. And if they do beat Kansas, I think that gives them a realistic shot at a two seed. And then that second round, you're going to have a tough matchup in the semis because you're going to play an Iowa State team that's trying to fight for probably cementing themselves as a two seed. I think they're pretty steady on that line, but I don't think they can get to a one seed because of their non-conference slate. But then you got Texas, who's red hot right now, and Kansas State, who's trying to make the Big 12 tournament. So you're going to face a really competitive team there in the semifinals, and that's going to be really fascinating. But I think Baylor's in a good shape to make the semifinals and potentially make a deep run in the Big 12 tournament, which really hasn't been commonplace under Scott Drew.
No, that's not an area where they've really thrived. It's kind of always been sort of, I wouldn't call it an afterthought, because there's been, you know, reasons to jockey for seeds and things like that, but it's not like a crowning achievement on his resume, the Big 12 tournament showings, that's for sure. And actually, the Big 12 tournament now underway with UCF and Oklahoma State getting started. So that's the kickoff, and then you'll have West Virginia, Cincinnati later on this afternoon. Then tomorrow you'll have four games, depending on, you know, the two winners today. They'll go on to face BYU and Kansas, respectively. And then you have Oklahoma, TCU, as well as Kansas State and Texas. And then finally on Thursday, you'll have Baylor as game four of four, an 8:30 start time against whoever they end up facing. One of three options right now, as we've pointed out. West Virginia, Cincinnati, and then the winner of that game versus Kansas, and the winner of that game is who the 14th-ranked Bears will face. But, yeah, Tech, Houston, Iowa State, Baylor, all waiting to get started for a couple more days. So looking forward to that. And meanwhile, you had superlatives dropped from the conference as far as the year-end awards, and there was a big-time standout award to mention for Scott Drew and company, and that was the Freshman of the Year honors, which went to Jacoby Walter, Baylor guard, freshman, obviously, and whether or not he's a sophomore remains to be seen, but very much an NBA prospect. I know that there's also a case that could have been made for Emisi. If you wanted to go that direction, you could certainly, you know, put out an argument for him, but becoming commonplace to get Freshman of the Year. Now, Keontae George getting that last year. So, Jacoby Walter, any thoughts on, well, I guess I should also mention before we just move on here, you had Ray J. Dennis, also named All Big 12 second team. Jalen Bridges and Jacoby Walter, also on the All Big 12 third team. Langston Love, Eve Missy, also honorable mentions as well. Eve Missy made the Big 12 All Defensive team. So great honor for him there. Ray J. Dennis was on the All Big 12 or the Big 12 All Newcomer team. And then the Big 12 All-Freshman team, surprise, surprise, the Freshman of the Year in Jacoby Walter, and then another great candidate and an All-Defensive performer in Eve Missy. So a lot of awards to run through there for Missy and Walter and Dennis and Love. But any thoughts on Walter's honors or just in general the end-of-season accolades here?
Right. I mean, I think it's a pretty good spot for everyone. I was happy to see Jalen Bridges make one of the three teams. I think he's been more than deserving of it. And that 32-point performance he put up against Texas that really saved Baylor in that game, especially in the first half, was brilliant. I mean, he was phenomenal in that game. He's had a really big impact on this season for Baylor. See him get third team is a pretty big deal and very happy for him. Jacoby Walter, I think pretty easily the Freshman of the Year in this league. scoring, the amount of pressure he puts on a defense, the three-point shooting, I think all of that is really, really intriguing. And I know a lot of people are disappointed in some regards by his defense and various areas where they feel like he could be better. And I know Baylor fans are going to be the biggest critics of him, which makes sense because he's on, you know, Baylor's team. But in general, I mean, this guy's a lottery pick. This guy's going to be an NBA player very soon, and he's also played his heart out for this Baylor team. He plays really, really hard, and whether that leads to ideal results every game, you know, it doesn't happen every game, but I think in general he's been really, really good for Baylor. I mean, he's the kind of guy who definitely raises their ceiling as we enter March. Eves Meese, easy choice for, you know, being on the freshman team. Obviously, he's had a great impact. I think you could make an argument he could be on the third team, but you look at the third team, and there are some very deserving guys on that list as well, so it makes a lot of sense. And Ray J. Dennis on all Big 12 second team, I mean, you know, there's probably not a more important player to Baylor's success in March than Ray J. Dennis. I mean, when the guy takes care of the basketball, Baylor is really, really hard to beat. The problem is it's been very up and down. So I understand he's on second team specifically because of the importance he has to Baylor's success. And he's going to have to play really, really good basketball the rest of the season if Baylor's going to actually make a run.
So how do you feel bracketology-wise entering this week?
Yeah, so let's talk about that really quick. So Bracket Matrix has Baylor as a 3 seed right now. They got jumped barely by Creighton this week. So Baylor's no longer the top overall 3 seed. They're right behind Creighton on that list. I still think it's a fine spot to be. I'm seeing Marquette. They're a team that I think is kind of... they're the one who I look at and say, okay, if Baylor's going to get a 2 seed, that's the team they're going to knock out, because Marquette's had a lot of issues with injury. Without Tyler Kolek, they've been really suspect. So if they lose early in the Big East tournament, and let's say Baylor beats Kansas in the Big 12 tournament, I think you could see them flip-flop, and you could see Baylor move up a level. They're also going to need Creighton to lose, though, so that's probably going to be another part of this. I will say, I mean, I've listened to a lot of podcasts and a lot of people talking about this Baylor team, and it really is a fascinating conundrum because they play in such a tough league, and you look at some of the advanced metrics, and they're basically 14th across the board. The net, they're 14th. KenPom, they're 14th. I mean, that's basically where they are. But quad one wins, they are right outside the big three. So you got Houston, Purdue, UConn have 13, 11, and 11 quad one wins respectively. And then there's Baylor with 9. They're the only other team in the country with 9 or more quadrant one wins. That's a big deal. I mean, they're 9-8 in quad one. So again, I think their resume is very competitive with a lot of teams in the country, but that is going to require them to win at least one game in the Big 12 tournament. Again, hopefully against Kansas, because that gives you another quad one opportunity. So that's kind of where I'm at. I think after this weekend, if they're able to make it to the Big 12 championship game, I think that solidifies them as a 2 seed. If they win the Big 12 tournament, I still think the highest they can go is a 2 seed. I don't see them sneaking into the one line.
Yeah, hard to picture that at this point with the way it's gone, but in good shape. Definitely feels like this team hasn't quite got over a certain apex. Like they've approached this ceiling, but they haven't like broken through it or gotten on the other side of this hill.
The Tech game felt like it could have been that, right?
Yeah,
like four in a row, and then you just. But it was a tough game. Like winning at Tech, not many teams win at Tech. But you're exactly right. It's like, when are they going to win that game that makes you really go, oh, okay, this team can actually make a deep run in March? And who knows, maybe they do that in this tournament if they beat Kansas and Iowa State and get to the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah, I mean, it says feasible as a path as there has been, I would think, for mm-hmm. them in recent years. So, yeah, you're set up pretty well to get at least into, like, the semifinals. I mean, really just handle your business, and you should be in the semis. And then it's game on, and we'll see what the lay of the land looks like at that point. But, I mean, you've got a couple days here to rest up and watch everybody else, and then you're the last game on Thursday. So a bit of a wait here, but a lot of time to kind of get focused and get ready for this push in March, which, you know we'll get a question about it, but there's some pressure to go a little bit deeper this year. It's been a couple years since that natty, but, you know, those couple years haven't really featured deep runs, or haven't featured deep runs. So you're recruiting well and you're winning a lot, but now I think people again want to see a little bit more in terms of the March portion of the schedule. And so after a couple years of sort of so-so, Yeah, let's see what this team can do, and hopefully they're geared up, healthy, and ready to go.
Yeah, and I look at the six seeds and the seven seeds. There's going to be some fairly weak teams in those groups that you would reasonably play, because like a Texas Tech, for instance, probably won't be in the same region as Baylor. But there's some teams in there. I mean, you look at Washington State, Utah State, Dayton, Nevada, like those are teams that I think Baylor could absolutely beat in that second round, but they got to get there first. I do think Baylor is solidified as a three seed, though. No matter what happens in the Big 12 tournament, I think their floor now is a three seed, but you still want to, you know, be playing your kind of best basketball going into the Big 12 tournament. So again, I think at least winning one game, potentially giving yourself a shot at a two seed, I do think should be really important to this Baylor team. But again, history says they're probably going to maybe win one game or maybe lose that first game just based on how they've played in the Big 12 tournament recently.
Yeah, hopefully they can change history here, though, because it'd be nice to see this team really spread its wings and flex its muscle a little bit. And, you know, I'm already hearing the draws and the bracketology and all of that. I'm more of a let's just wait and see it when it arrives kind of a guy, but I get all of the speculation. It's what we do. But I'm already hearing, like, some excuses being set up almost of like, well, you know, if they pull this, and it's like, you know what, at this point, you want to be a big-time program, you want to be taken serious, you want to be mentioned with all these other big-time programs. That's not a thing that you climb that mountain because, like, you got the right draw a bunch of years in a row. No, ultimately, you get a bad draw, and you beat the bad draw, and then you move past the bad draw, and you make it a good draw in the end. And so that's what I want to hear, as opposed to, like, already clutching pearls over who they might face in the first or second. Doesn't matter. Go beat them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a top dog program, then yeah, you're gonna get some draws. Like last year was a bummer. You got North Carolina pretty much right out, or was that 2 years ago?
2 years ago. But you got Creighton, who made the
Creighton
Elite
last
Eight,
year. And, so I get it, but at some point, like, you know what, Creighton's probably going like, dang, we drew Baylor early on, and guess what they did? They beat them. And then they went on and made a run. And so that's what I would like to see from Scott Drew and company at this point.
I agree. Like, this team needs to make the Sweet 16. Like, there's really no excuses. I know if they don't, it's not going to matter that much. It's not like I'm going to sit here and say, oh, now Scott Drew needs to be on the hot seat. Right. It's nothing like that. But I do think if you're a big-time program, if you're one of those new blood programs that we've talked about, you got to make that leap from, oh, we've lost 2 years in a row in the round of 32, but we're an elite program. Well, if you're going to be an elite program, you need to make the Sweet 16. You need to be competitive when it matters in March.
Yep, that's all I mean by that, and you pretty much summed it up well there. So we'll see what the draw eventually is, but first things first, got to let a couple more days play out before we even know who they'll face on Thursday. But West Virginia, Cincy, or Kansas is what you're looking at. In KC. So meanwhile, for the women, they've already wrapped up their postseason tournament. Not a lot to write home about, not a lot to really talk about. It was a very brief showing for a team that had gone into the tournament on a pretty good little hot streak. Nikki Collin and the Bears had won six games in a row to close out the regular season, and then drew Iowa State, drew Texas Tech first in the tournament, got the win there to open things up, and then turn around and the streak ends at the hands of Iowa State, 67-62, in their second game there in Kansas City. And so the journey as far as the conference tournament comes to a close after just two games. Obviously, Iowa State, a very good program, but Nikki Collin and company finished the season as far as the regular season and conference tournament go. Now at this point, 12-6 in conference play, 24-7 overall, and they were on a hot streak, as I mentioned, heading into the tournament and even getting that first win, but not enough to propel them further in the bracket. And so they sit back now and await their own bracketology and what the tournament's going to look like as far as trying to make a run in March Madness.
Very tough one to lose. Up 62-59 with a minute 44 left, and you kind of felt like, okay, there's a great opportunity here to get this job done. Bella Fonteroy missed a free throw that would have put them up by four, and then from that point on, it was all Iowa State. 8-0 run to end the game. Really disappointing because it felt like this game was right there for them to continue riding this momentum. And like we talked about, really important to solidify yourself as a four seed, because then you get home court advantage in those first two rounds. That is so important when it comes to, you know, moving on in March on the women's side. And then, of course, Iowa State turns around and just blows out Oklahoma as well. And now they're playing Texas in the Big 12 championship game. And it's like, well, that could have been Baylor. I mean, Baylor had every opportunity to do that. They didn't get the job done. Now, you know, you look at bracketology, and they're a six seed now. They're definitely not going to host. They're going to have to go on the road somewhere. And that makes me even less optimistic about them making it out of making it to the Sweet 16 now at this point. So that's kind of disappointing. Obviously, they could still get there, but this season started so well, and then they just lost all the momentum once conference play hit. After that big win over Texas, everything just started to free fall a little bit for Baylor, and they've just been so hot and cold all season long. And so, disappointing finish. Who knows? Maybe they can turn around in March, but the road definitely got a lot harder now after this Big 12 tournament performance.
Yeah, I mean, it was up and down. But again, they closed really strong and then just unable to finish the deal against the Cyclones, who now will play tonight for a Big 12 tournament championship against a Texas team that I guess on the men's and women's side is really surging right now as far as hoops goes. And God, I mean, come on, Big 12. Really, they already won football. Like, now they're going to possibly, I mean, we'll see on the men's side. They're surging, but they still got some teams in their way. But here they are playing for a title tonight. So, I don't know, go Iowa State. That feels gross, too. But, yeah, I think probably there will be a lot of people rooting for Iowa State. I don't know. I got no dog in that fight, actually.
Iowa State's not going to win, so I don't think it. Yeah, I think Texas is going to win.
Probably.
And Texas is trying to fight for a one seed as well. They're kind of right on the fringe right now of being a two or a one. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. Yeah, Texas is surging on the men's side, but let's not forget they're still, what, the 10 seed or the 7 seed?
I think it's funny, and maybe not so funny for some people who really hate them, but yeah. I mean, it's the last year and you're hoping to like really stick it to them, and it's like, are they going to play for every single championship on their way right out? Because it's the way it's felt like so far.
And then Oklahoma won the women's
side
the regular season, so it's been a bummer. Luckily, Oklahoma's been pretty bad on the men's side. They're going to be a tournament team, but not very good.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've at least got their coach, who's now announced, Porter Moser, that he will be staying. Yeah. So there was that little scare, I guess, for, you know, a couple hours yesterday of rumors that he'd be looking around.
He's likable, unlike Rodney Terry.
Yeah, and so obviously I have no beef with Oklahoma and Texas. I respect their program. It's just funny, though, of all the clamoring about this being the last year, you would just hope from a Big 12 perspective that there'd be a little bit more of a fight put up. And instead, like, here's Texas playing for the playoff, and now playing for the women's championship in the tournament, and we'll see how the men's side goes. But, yeah, not what you were drawing up if you were, I guess, the folks really hoping to stick it to them on their way out. But regardless, credit and respect. Moving on, there is the women's bracketology to be determined, as we pointed out. But, yeah, just disappointment that you couldn't go a little bit deeper in the conference tournament. And with a brand new, beautiful, shiny arena, would have been a very cool thing to host some tournament games in year number one, which has become commonplace, is hosting those early action games around here for years now. But that will not be the case this time around.
Yeah, so. And they actually fell a seed line. They were a 5 seed last week going into the Big 12 tournament. Now they're a 6 seed. So, again, these conference tournaments have shaken out kind of poorly for Baylor, and Baylor didn't play very well. And so that's causing the adjustment. Hopefully they're able to get to the 5 line to just avoid having to play a 3 seed, because, you know, you start playing 3 seeds in the women's game and you're playing someone really, really good. And so I'm concerned, obviously, because they got to go on the road. And it's just again, disappointing, because it felt like they were really starting to hit their stride. Now, I know the competition wasn't great at the end of the year, and we mentioned that, but still it felt like, oh, maybe they can get some of that early season momentum back, and then they go and just lose a really kind of heartbreaker to Iowa State.
Yep, those are the breaks, though, so we'll see them next in NCAA tournament action and find out their seedings here soon enough. Meanwhile, I did mention this for the men, so I'll mention it for the women as well, but the postseason honors, Sarah Andrews, All Big 12, second team, almost a clean sweep for OU and Texas and all the accolades as far as players of the year, coach of the year. The only one that wasn't a Sooner or a Longhorn was J.J. Quinterly of West Virginia was the defensive player of the year, but the other six honors swept by the Sooners and Longhorns, kind of going back to what I was talking about. Meanwhile, for the Bears, though, Sarah Andrews, the headliner as far as a second-teamer, and then you had Asia Blackwell, Dariana Edwards, and Dariana Little-Page-Bugs also that trio making honorable mention, and that was it. So short list, but congratulations to those ladies on their postseason honors. All right, anything before we get into the mailbag here?
Yeah, it's a rough week for baseball and softball. Both lost their series. Baseball got swept by Houston, and Baylor softball lost a really, really close one to Oklahoma State. I think that program is actually pretty good for Baylor.
Yeah, softball's good. I mean, they dropped good. 2 of 3, but they were close games. They were competitive. Yeah. Oklahoma State's ranked higher than them, so mm-hmm. It's not like you were losing to some, you know, unranked lesser opponent. You're technically losing to a team that's better than you. So, and you played them competitively, so I think there were some good things to gain there on that side of things. On the other side,
just tough. I mean, lost to Dallas Baptist, who's good, but then you turn around and face a Houston team that now their record looks good. They're 11-4, but that's coming off of the 3-0 sweep of Baylor. I mean, they're fine. They're probably going to be middle of the pack or lower, I would think, in the Big 12, actually. And Baylor just not very good, and two of the games were competitive, and one of them was a blowout. So,
yeah, I don't really have anything to add. I mean, I like Mitch Thompson a lot. I don't know. I know Levi Caraway for us covers that as close as you can. So if you want baseball covers, and Levi over on Sikkim365.com is your go-to, and probably need to dabble more in his stuff. But, yeah, it's they're not good. And I don't know what all the issues are. I don't know if this is like an NIL thing that we'll hear about, or we need this or we need that. I know Mitch Thompson's a really great coach. And so I hope that it gets on track. But, yeah, it's just kind of there right now. And it is not something that I even think we'll bring up every week here pretty soon. Because
it's about to get ugly.
No point to, yeah.
Yeah, it's about to get really ugly. They have a series with Texas Tech, who just lost to Texas. So, you know, they're going to be out for vengeance. And then they go to Austin the next week. So, I mean, we could be talking about a team that's 0-9 in the Big 12. I mean, very possible.
And I don't know where the priority is as far as baseball. Like, I know that they've invested and that there are former players behind the scenes and people that want them to do well, but like, I don't know in this ecosystem of where priorities lie and what's feasible and what expectations should be in the NIL era, because I know that here's the thing with Baylor. Baylor is small, and there's not a bunch of, like, there's just not alumni by the hundreds with big money, you know, that can spend like you can spend in other places. And so you're being asked to, like, basically help the football program right now, like, get over this hump and get back to winning, and hoping you don't have to pay some major buyout here pretty soon. And then you've got basketball. Obviously, there's heavy investment there, which is earned, especially on the men's side at this point. But, like, how much is left over for baseball? And, like, and is that even the problem? Like, I don't know. I don't really feel like now's the time to do a deep dive on the program. But all I'm saying is, I'm just talking out loud and wondering myself right now as they struggle of just, like, what's the ultimate answer going to be there? Is this just sort of how it has to be for right now, or is this, like, the way it's going to be? Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I don't know.
I think NIL is definitely a problem, but I also think that I'm looking around and seeing these smaller schools have success, and I'm looking around and, like, okay, so if NIL is a problem, should BYU, Cincinnati, UCF, should all these programs be finishing ahead of you in baseball?
I mean, is the difference UCF has like 30,000 more students? Is that the difference? I don't know. Basically what I'm saying is Baylor too small in this era to be able to be competitive in every single category like they were once upon a time? Are there shortfalls somewhere, and that just happens to be baseball's? You know what I'm saying?
And I understand that, and I think that Baylor is putting more of a focus on football and basketball, which, in my opinion, they should.
Have to, yeah.
But then I look around and I'm like, okay, but then why is TCU fine?
Right.
Why is Wake Forest a top 10 program every year? Why is Vanderbilt a top 10 program all year? Do they just only care about baseball? Coastal Carolina? I know some of these programs only care about baseball. Like, UC Campbell inside the top 25. Yeah, because they only care about baseball, I guess. But still, I think some of this comes down to evaluation. I think some of this comes down to coaching. And I know people want to call this a rebuild, and that's fine. But I don't feel like it was this kind of rebuild where you're going to be the worst team in the Big 12. I don't think it should be like that.
We'll see how that all goes. But, yeah, definitely some struggles for baseball right now, some questions that are fair to wonder, and just, yeah, we'll see, I guess, where the journey takes us the rest of the way. Because there is still a long way to go here. All right, to the mailbag we go. And Darth Mellon, call your shot. How far do the Baylor men go in the Big 12 and NCAA tournaments?
Big 12 tournament, I think they're going to lose in the semifinals. Probably to Iowa State, but maybe to one of those Texas or Kansas State games. I just think that game is going to mean more to one of those two than it will to Baylor. But I think they'll get to the semis. NCAA tournament, it's so hard to answer this without seeing the bracket in front of me to see the matchups, but I think Baylor is a Sweet 16 if they get a really lucky draw, maybe an Elite Eight team. But I think right now I'm probably going to stick with Sweet 16 until I see a draw.
Yeah, I don't want to be boring and match answers here, but while you're talking, I was thinking to myself, yeah, I think they win one game in Kansas City and then probably fall in the semifinals, and then I think Sweet 16, that should be your barometer, that should be your baseline. That's a big goal or an achievement. That's why Sweet 16s, you hear that, and that's a big deal to make those. But having not made those for a couple years now, I think it's really important that they do, regardless of who they draw early on. And will there be a situation where if they go out in the round of 32 and they happen to match up with so-and-so, like, okay, when we arrive at that point, that's cool. We can break that down and what that really means. But, yeah, without knowing the particulars and just knowing the projections of this team and the expectations of this team, I think Sweet 16 is where you are hoping to see them get bare minimum. So, yeah, Sweet 16 and at least one win in Kansas City for me as well. Scotty B, the Baylor King, what's your way too early biggest trap game for Baylor for 2024?
So I was kind of just looking at this, and it's really hard when you talk about a team that's coming off of a three-win season to be like, oh, this is their trap game, because it's like kind of every game is a trap game because you could lose any of them. But I kind of just went to a game where I feel like Baylor absolutely has to win this game if they're going to have a good season, and it's the BYU game. It's early on in the Big 12 schedule. They start their season, and I think most people would reasonably say they're probably going to be 2-2, optimistically, maybe 3-1, pessimistically 1-3, and then you roll into that BYU game, and it's like, okay, so this game is probably going to determine whether you're a bowl team or not, in my eyes, because then right after the BYU game, you go to Iowa State and to Texas Tech, where you're probably going to be the underdog by a touchdown in both those games, or at least by, you know, 3 points, something along those lines. So I think it makes that game extremely important. If you're 2-2 and then you lose that game and you're 2-3, and then you go on the road to Ames and Lubbock and lose those two, you're 2-5 and you're probably going to be looking for a new head coach. So I think that BYU game is the game that I'm really looking at as a trap game, but also a game that is just kind of a must win in my eyes at this point.
Yeah, I don't think there's really trap games when you basically are coming off of losses to every single one of the teams you're playing, almost every one of them. Like, you didn't play Kansas last year, but you lost to basically everybody else on this schedule. So I don't know that you could really be overlooking anybody. And I will say that the one I look at is Air Force, and even then you lost to them 2 years ago in a bowl game where you got embarrassed. And so could you really possibly be overlooking? Maybe, because the team's drastically different from 2 years ago, but the head coach isn't. And I think that's the one that I look at, because even still, that's, you know, in comparison to, again, all these teams that beat you last year, I think sandwiched between Utah, where you're going to Salt Lake, and that's going to be an uphill battle, and then Colorado, the big Big 12 opener, and Dion, and being on the road, you got Air Force and Waco right there between those two as your bridge from the non-con to the conference. And so I'll say between traveling to Salt Lake and then coming home and then traveling to Boulder, just that little game in the middle there, Air Force, that last non-con game, I could see that being a trap game. So that's the one that I will go with because of what surrounds it. And I just think that, you could be a little bit too focused on Salt Lake and then turning around and getting Big 12 play started.
Yeah,
so.
And I think we're both looking at early signs of what this team is going to be, right? We're looking at early games. I mean, if they lose to Air Force, they're probably going to start 1-3.
Dude, they lose to Air Force, then it's not good.
Yeah, it's snowball. So it's kind of that same thing with the BYU game. So, yeah, those two early on, big time trap games.
I mean, but you know, you look at it. There's a lot of I've seen national pundits that are Baylor's got Utah in the conference game right away. It's like that's not a conference game. That's not a conference game because of the way realignment worked out. But Air Force right after Utah is the one I'm picking. But then you look at it. Okay, they haven't played Colorado in a while, but they lost to BYU in the last matchup. Yep. 2 years ago.
2022.
They lost to Iowa State last year. They lost to Texas Tech badly last year. Oklahoma State, we know, is a thorn in the side, although, you know, we still got the Big 12 title. They didn't play them last year. But regular season-wise, Oklahoma State has been very good.
They lost to them in 2022.
Who, Baylor lost to them?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They beat them in the Big 12 championship game, but regular season-wise, they've been very good against Baylor. So, yeah, lost to them the last time. TCU, please. West Virginia got beat by them last year. Houston, embarrassing loss at the end of the game in Waco last year. And you didn't play Kansas. So that's your schedule. You lost to everybody except for the teams that you didn't play.
Lots of payback. Lots of payback opportunities.
Yeah, potentially there. But, yeah, I look at Air Force sandwiched between Utah and Colorado as the trap game there. All right. Let's see. Anyways, this is also from Scotty. I hope Baylor women's basketball gets sent to Vatek or Indiana because both have their best front court players, won't be 100% due to knee injuries. Indiana does also have a backup front court player that is also banged up as well. So, yeah, we'll see, Scotty. But there are a couple of teams, I guess, to be on the lookout for. SJ 89-99. Can Nikki get our women's team to fire on all pistons for the tournament, or will we be an early out? Seems like sometimes it's the fundamentals that get in our way, like making shots and not overthrowing passes. When things are all working, this team is really good. Another thing is how Jana V has emerged this year. It just feels like we don't know what version of our team we get game to game. We absolutely could have beaten Iowa State, and it's frustrating to see that when we know that's not their best.
Yeah, if I'm betting, I think they're going to be an early out. I don't see them getting out of whatever region they're in. I just think it's a big ask to say, okay, yeah, go on the road against a 3 seed and come out of that alive. I just think that's going to be really tough. So I would say that my guess right now would be a second round exit. I just don't think by the end of the year, I don't think they're the same team we saw at the beginning of the year. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I think their ceiling is, I mean, they closed really strong. I mean, they lost a tough game in the second round of the tournament, but I mean, they were on a hot streak to end the year. So, I mean, we've seen them play well here recently. Finished respectfully, you know, respectable in the Big 12. But yeah, I just don't think they have that oomph or that star power that the women's game really thrives on. Like, the best teams at the very top, like, there's just not a lot of upsets. And so this is just sort of a middle-of-the-road team. You should win your first game. You should still have a favorable draw. But even still, like, you're getting to the point where it's going to be kind of a close matchup based on the seeding. It's not like you're a 1 versus a 16 by any means. It's going to be more of like a pretty close, you know, matchup. And then beyond that, yeah, I mean, you're looking at most likely being an underdog the rest of the way. And I don't know that they have the just star power or the oomph that the great teams in women's basketball have to be able to make much of a run. We'll see how they draw. But, yeah, frustrating loss to Iowa State for sure. And it just feels like they're good at times, but they can't like really press the throttle and stick it and stay on it and take it somewhere where it hasn't really been in a while.
And I think the hard part is with the end of the year, they played a bunch of teams that aren't going to be in the tournament, and then they played West Virginia, who's projected a 6 seed, and Kansas, who's projected a 9 seed. So they haven't really played anyone that is of the caliber that they would have to play in the second
round.
This
isn't the men's side of the conference where it's like all of these tournament teams. Yeah, it's a couple really good, three, four really good teams.
Iowa State,
Oklahoma, Texas.
But Oklahoma's a 5 seed. Like, they're just not, there's not a lot of respect. It's really Texas is the only really, really good team. And Baylor did split with them. But I find it hard to believe that they're going to win a road game against a 3 seed.
Yeah, not likely. We'll see how that goes. Bearcats, let's say the Baylor men's basketball team at least reaches the Big 12 tournament championship game. How would you feel about our NCAA tournament basketball run, given that momentum? Thanks, guys. I enjoy the show. Well, thank you, Bearcats.
I mean, I think that'd be a great sign. I still think a lot of it's going to come down to the draw. I think Baylor just has some matchups that aren't going to be very favorable to them, potentially. But I do think if they make it to the conference tournament, my expectations will rise to where, yes, for sure, Sweet 16, and I think they can get to the Elite Eight. I think it definitely changes that perspective if they make it there. If they win the Big 12 tournament, you know, maybe I'll start getting really optimistic, and I don't know if that's a good thing based on the way this team's played all year.
Doc Crow, would it be better to win only one or two games in the Big 12 tourney versus losing the first game and having a longer time to rest, dial in, and focus for March Madness?
Shoot, I think this team just needs to play more games.
I think they need to play more games. Yeah, I don't think there's any, like, we're resting up for the big run. I think you got to go out and win and play. And, yeah, I think it'd be better to win one or two games. I don't think this is a team that just needs the rest before – you know, hitting the big show.
They need more reps. Like, we haven't seen this team at their best, so the more chances they get to that point, I think it is very important.
Yeah, if they were super veteran-laden or something, then you'd probably say, like, yeah, they take a little bit of, like, Kansas is obviously taking a breather in the Big 12 tournament.
Like 2021, the Baylor team lost to Oklahoma State. I mean,
yeah, but this team's not that team, and so, yeah, I think being younger and just kind of getting into the groove of things, it's probably better to play more. So, yeah, I would say win a couple games in the Big 12 tourney. Who would you take between Baylor and Purdue in the tournament?
I know people are going to say, oh, you would cheer for Purdue, and I would 100% cheer for Baylor if they played against Purdue. There's no question about that. But I don't think – if they played 10 times, I think Purdue would probably win 7 of those times, maybe 8. I just think Purdue's a better basketball team, and I don't know how you could look at that and say really anything different. They would be the favorite by multiple points in that matchup as well. I think Purdue with Zach Edey would be a little too much for Baylor.
Who from the Under Armour camp does not have a Baylor offer, but after seeing them in person, deserves to?
I mean, there's a few. Again, I don't get the whole picture because I don't get every single testing time and things like that. But a guy like Danny Beal on the defensive line, a 2026 guy, and then maybe Dylan Talley, wide receiver out of Arlington Bowie. Those are two that I kind of look at and go, oh, okay. I'm interested. Like, if they tested well, you know, that might be something. There's some other guys as well, a lot of younger guys. But as far as any other 2025 guys, I know a lot of people are asking about Jackson Blackwell, the kid from Lorena. He won DL MVP at the camp, and I know he's an intriguing one, really good weightlifter. I think he won some awards in a weightlifting competition. He's going to go for a state championship as well, and he looked really good. But again, I need to know the testing numbers. I need to know the height and weight, his wingspan, and things like that before I could even think about saying that he's an offer at this time.
All right, getting down to the last few questions here. A couple minutes left in the show. GMAC, what has happened to the women's basketball team? What can Nick Key do to fix this during the postseason?
You know, I just think they need more talent. And that's so generic to say that, but I really do. And they need more post players that are dominant. Like, they don't really have that. And so they've gotten beaten up on the boards multiple times this year. And then just talent-wise at the guard position, finding more quality starters at the guard position. Another Sarah Andrews, who's maybe even better than Sarah Andrews, would be ideal, obviously, if they're going to take that step to being elite again. But I think, again, premier post play and another really, really good guard are kind of what I'm looking for out of this team if they're going to make that jump next year.
Yeah, I think the biggest way to close the gap between yourself and some of the premier teams is the talented players. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's something that obviously – he or she who shall not be named, I'm just kidding, Mulkey was very good about bringing in top blue chip type recruits, and I think Nikki's brought in some good players, but not to the level of the talent accumulated here over the years, or even now in Baton Rouge, or at, you know, in Columbia with Dawn Staley, and just look at the top programs. They've got top players. They've got great players, and I think Baylor's got some good players. I don't think they have great players, though. Like, they're not going to out-talent, you know, the teams at the top. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where you're seeing the biggest gap, more so than coaching or that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think you can't really fix the talent at this point, but you just got to play mistake-free basketball. You got to play clean, solid basketball and just hope that you get on a hot streak. That's about the only way to really go on a run this postseason because, you know, after probably a round, you're going to be pretty even, I think, talent-wise with pretty much anybody you face. All right, thank you, GMAC. Hopefully that answers your question. Jared Burr, Does our lack of arm strength at the QB position give y'all concern for the upcoming season? It's been reported that both Sawyer and Daquan are accurate, but not that great arm strength-wise.
I think if you just put Daquan Finn out on a field and asked him to just chuck it as far as he could, yeah, his arm strength isn't going to be elite. But I think the more important area is how does he look on throws that are 20-plus yards down the field? And he was graded out as an 86-rated quarterback when it comes to that. That was his PFF grade, 86. To put in perspective, Blake Shapen was at 66 last year. In 2022, Shapen was at 90. But the big thing with Shapen was he was very different on play action versus regular scheme downs, whereas Finn is very good at both. Very consistent, whether it's out of the shotgun, whether it's in play action, whether it's rolling out, he's very consistent. And you put all that together, I think it's going to make the passing attack more consistent. He's also dealt with a lot of pressure and has done a great job at avoiding pressure. But the biggest thing with Finn that I think is so intriguing is the deep ball that I just mentioned. He was an 86 this past year, graded-wise. As a sophomore, he was 64.6. As a junior, he was 71. So there's been consistent jumps. He's been getting better and better. Big-time throw rate has gone up each of his last 3 years. Adjusted completion percentage up each of the last 3 years. Pass grade up each of the last 3 years. Pressure turning into sacks, meaning when he gets pressured, how many of those turn into actual sacks? That has gone from 22.6% to 14%, and then last year to 8.4%. So you're seeing a guy that's just getting more and more comfortable avoiding pressure, making throws downfield, and turning those throws into big plays. His ADOT has been right around 11 each year. So I think that there's a difference between, okay, you watch a guy in the pocket, and does he throw it a mile? You know, is he just have this huge cannon like a Jamarcus Russell? Does he have that? Or is he just really good at being accurate on those deep balls? What's more important? And to me, it's about being accurate on those throws down the field. And I think Finn is more than accurate enough to do that. Does his lack of arm strength take away some things? Sure, it may take away some things in their offense, but I think his arm is plenty strong enough to be accurate and make big plays down the field and also make the throws that they need across the field on screens and things like that. I think he's going to be just fine in that regard.
All right, so let's wrap it up here. Three questions in 5 minutes. Useless Kim degree, and great answer, and hopefully, Jared, that answers what you're looking for there. Useless Kim degree, do you expect the roster moves to be finished for Baylor, or should we expect to see some impactful additions or transfers out after spring ball?
I think there will be more additions after spring ball. The anticipation is that this is going to be a very big spring. There's going to be a lot of guys that enter the portal, potentially from Baylor leaving, and then also guys who they're going to potentially add as well. But I do think, in general, there will be more additions and maybe a couple of impactful ones. Yeah.
I think the question for and the answer for every program in America basically at this point is yes. Like I think the years where you don't have post-spring attrition are going to be the outliers versus those who have changes. I mean, even if it's something very subtle, like one or two players, that's maybe not even super notable. But I think every program now has a post-spring attrition period that you just come to expect.
And you need.
Yeah, and that Baylor probably needs to shed some guys, honestly. But we will see how they work through this next month. Not Grant Taff, but yes, to your question. Not Grant Taff, how many Big 12 teams do you think make the Sweet 16?
Without seeing the draw, I'm going to go with four. And those four I have right now are Baylor, Iowa State, Houston, and then I'm kind of up in the air with the fourth one, but I think there will be a fourth one. Right now I would bet on Kansas, even though I know they're dealing with injuries.
Yeah, there's some questions, like Kansas, for example. I'll go three, but yeah, I could definitely see four, but I'll say three teams make the Sweet 16. And obviously the I'd say Iowa State, Houston, and then, yeah, one of Baylor or Kansas. And so, yeah, four is maybe the better way to go, but I'll say three. And you're very curious of how much Kansas gets their act together and how much health comes into play for them, but certainly feel great about Houston. I mean, that could be the next team raising a trophy, and that would be something when you're talking about the best conference in America and trying to develop something that's, you know, not entirely the same as like the SEC in football, but something similar to like the starting point of that. have Houston go win a title, or anyone else for that matter, but Houston having, you know, seen Kansas do it recently, Baylor do it recently, that's when you could really have some big-time bragging rights.
Yeah, and I think BYU could make the Sweet 16 as well. BYU, I don't want to leave them out there pretty good as well. But they need this, because all this talk about the Big 12 not being that good and being overrated because they, quote-unquote, didn't play anyone in the non-conference is such a joke. It's far and away the best conference in the country, so they need to kind of show that in March.
Yeah, and that's also coaches jockeying for their team who are on the bubble. And
Jeff Capel.
That's him politicking in some ways, or in many ways, but I get it. Everybody does it at some point or another, but yeah, if you want to be considered the best, you've got to perform like it. We don't do this thing where all of a sudden you just get automatically in the tournament based on the conference you play in. At least basketball doesn't, because they have a brain and they actually award, you know, the on the court, and don't determine champions based on 10 years and stupid sample sizes and money and things like that. So, yeah, but to be the best, you've got to go out and win it. That's why the SEC in football is considered the best. They've had multiple teams win it over multiple years for a good long while now. Finally here, not Grant Taff, if you could relive any moment in Baylor athletics, which moment would you choose?
It's tough between the national championship in 2021. Being there in Indianapolis was absolutely insane. And then Baylor football winning the Big 12 championship in 2013, their first Big 12 title. That was really, really cool. It was my sophomore year at Baylor as well. So those two kind of really stand out to me, even though there are others.
Yeah, I mean, there's various ones. I don't know about reliving and all that, but I guess the Sugar Bowl was a lot of fun. That was a great week and a really fun ending to that season. So the Sugar Bowl win over Ole Miss was awesome. I wouldn't mind reliving that for just being in New Orleans for a few days and just the way the game went. That was cool. 2013, the win over Texas to win the Big 12 was closing out Floyd Casey was very cool as well. Very unique because you were closing out a stadium. And then I hate bringing this up because, man, at this point it just sounds really stupid, honestly, because why even hang on to it this? But 61-58 versus TCU was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. They were dead in the water, had no business winning that game, and there was just something super special that night that you don't see very often. So I don't like bringing that up as much because it's like when you've lost to them every time except for once since then. Yeah. I mean, 10 years?
It's been
ridiculous.
Bad.
Ridiculous.
2021 winning the Big 12 championship over Oklahoma State was also up
there.
Oh,
yeah,
as
that's
well.
That's yeah, up there. That's so, up I mean, there. There's been several, but, I mean, yeah, those are the highlights, I think, for probably most people. And, yeah, seeing Jerry McVay get the stop and winning a Big 12 championship, I wouldn't mind reliving that just craziness for one more go-around. So, yeah, all those would be there in the running for me. All right, appreciate everybody who threw in questions into the mailbag this week, and we love getting to those and having those as part of the podcast each week. But Grayson, anything before we wrap it up here?
No, just be sure to check out Sikkim 365 Premium. Tons of content, an entire early official visitor list, got about 30 names on that, and then of course just be sure to check out our basketball content as well. We got all kinds of content on the premium side, so be sure to stay tuned for that. And then of course YouTube, we got all kinds of content there as well.
Yeah, go and subscribe right now to this channel if you haven't already, Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365. Give us a thumbs up. We're here Tuesdays at 11:15 live each week, and then various other videos depending on our guests on the main show and things like that. But the Bearcast here Tuesdays at 11:15, so hit like and subscribe. And then over on 365 Sports YT, we've got 365 Sports with myself, Paul, and Smokey, and please hit like and subscribe over on that channel as well as we close in on 40,000 subscribers. So that'd be cool to get to 40 here pretty soon and then keep it going even higher. But, yeah, all the support is appreciated, and you joining us this week is appreciated as well. But that's it for us. Thanks to Garrett Ross behind the scenes. Thanks to Grayson Grunhafer, and I'm Craig Smoke. We'll talk to you next week. This has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.